She came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee.
Hello, everyone. This is Bob Main, and you're listening to Today's Survival Show, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice, to live life on your own terms, and strengthen your resolve. This is episode number 87 of Today's Survival Show, where I'm still trying to convince you that being a survivalist is not being a kook, it's not being a nut, or some kind of a conspiracy theorist. It's just being a normal person trying to cope and trying to live and trying to prepare for what life throws at us, which could be a lot of different things. So thanks for tuning in. If you're relatively new to the show, you're going to find it very practical in nature. And if you've been listening to me for a long time, thank you very much. As long as you keep listening, I'll try to keep putting out some decent content on these podcasts. It is Wednesday, the 28th. Of April. I'm back on the road again, folks. If you hear a little background noise, I'm back in my car, headed down to San Antonio, Texas, to get some business done. I feel a little bit guilty about this trip, though. The reason I feel guilty is because tomorrow, Thursday, half of my business day is going to be spent on the golf course. Yeah, I know. It's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. I'm actually going to be golfing with a customer. I don't get to golf very often, about twice a year. And I suck, folks. I'm not very good. My goal tomorrow is going to be able to make it through 18 holes without embarrassing myself. Truly. But it's, you know, my boss is actually coming into town to golf with me, which is an interesting treat, too. So think of me. I know it's hard work, but somebody has to do it. Anyway, on the way to San Antonio, I want to talk to you about the similarities between survival and the game of chess. Between survival and the game of chess. Any chess players listening to this show? I love the game. I've been playing it since I was 6 years old. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that. Earlier this month, there was a blog post on the survivalist boards. Excellent forum, folks. If you guys haven't checked out the survivalist boards, check it out. I know some of you have come to this show and come to our forum from the survivalist boards, and thank you very much. But Kev over at the survivalist boards put a good post up earlier this month that said that that survival is like playing chess. And I read it, and I absolutely loved that post. I will put a link to his original post so you can see it and all the comments and everything by the other people on the forum. And it got me thinking. And so I put some of my own thoughts on paper, and finally, after all this time, I've had a chance to talk to you about some of my own thoughts on how survival is like a game of chess. When I was a kid, my dad taught me how to play the game of chess. I was about 6 years old, and he started teaching me the game at and the strategy and everything that goes behind it at the tender age of six. And at first, it was frustrating for me, but he and I played hours and hours and hours. And you know, I'm from Wisconsin, and so during some of the cold winter days up there, during some of those dark days of winter, there's not a whole lot to do. And it was a great pastime for me and my dad to sit down, put the chessboard on the table, and just sit there. And I got real frustrated because for years I could not beat him. For years I could not beat him. As a matter of fact, before he died when I was 13 and a half, I only got to beat him one time. I don't think he let me win either. I think I truly figured the game out where I was able to beat him once. That's it. And I'll never forget that day. But it was a great pastime, and it was something that he and I enjoyed together. And we would sit down and pretty much play several times a month, and that was some of the greatest memories I have of my dad. And he loved the game, and I loved the game. One of the reasons my dad liked chess is because, you know, my dad had two college degrees, one in math and one in engineering. So he had the analytical mind that was necessary for the game of chess. And he loved any kind of game like that that helped you enhance the mind. And he taught me to like the game as well. And I still think that today it has given me some of the ability to have some of the critical thinking that I have right now. So, folks, you know what? teach your kids the game of chess. It is such a great strategic game, and it is so much like surviving and so much like dealing with life. I'm going to try to paint some of the similarities, borrowing some material from Kev's post over at Survivalist Boards, but I have a lot of good personal experience to share with you on this subject. The biggest thing is that my dad taught me the strategy of chess. He taught me how that if you don't plan ahead and you don't try to outsmart your opponent, that you're going to lose. And I became fairly proficient at playing the game, and actually, I was able to beat a lot of the people that were even older than me that I would play. I got involved on the chess team for a while when I was in school. I know that sounds kind of nerdy and everything, right? You know, here was a little kid like me with glasses on the chess team. Yeah, I was nerdy, but you know, like I said, it developed a lot of critical thinking at that point, which was very important to me at that point in my life. And what's really cool now is my son has actually taken a liking to the game. He started a couple years ago taking a liking to it, and I'll tell you what, at 12 years old, my son does pretty well. He gets kind of frustrated sometimes because he can't beat me. But sooner or later, folks, the day is going to come where he's going to beat me in chess. And when that day comes that he beats me, I can assure you of something, folks. It will be a day of celebration. Because what it's going to tell me when he is able to beat me in chess is it means that he will have got it. And what I mean by getting it is that he is going to learn the concept of planning and thinking ahead. And it'll tell me that he's finally grasped the concept of thinking three or four moves ahead of his opponent at all times, and developing a plan B, and developing a plan C, and an alternative way of doing everything when the opponent throws something at you that you don't expect. That's what he's going to learn. And when he is confident and capable of doing that, that's when he's going to beat me. And how great a day that's going to be. Now, let me relate this to real life. Okay, what's the real life example of what I'm talking about? I think in reality, our opponents, even though they vary quite a bit, they do a lot of unexpected things. The strategy of dealing with opponents is a lot like the game of chess. Now, you've heard me talk about many times on this show, we have a lot of different opponents in life. Sometimes our opponent is the weather. Sometimes it's our boss. Sometimes our opponent is an angry relative or a criminal that we unfortunately run into on the street. Sometimes our opponent is our own government. And sometimes our opponent is simply stress. Other times, our opponent can be a sudden injury, an illness, a pandemic, a death in the family. And the real unfortunate thing is sometimes our opponent is ourself. Can you relate to any of these? Okay. But even though, as I mentioned, our opponents are different, our strategy in dealing with them is in somewhat like the game of chess. And you have to have an alternative plan. You have to have a move ready if your opponent does something that you didn't expect. You have to have a reflexive response that I've talked about many times on this show, that you've practiced so many times that it just becomes instinctive and you know how to implement it. Okay? Common sense survival strategy, in my opinion, is very much the same as what I've described, isn't it? Right? Don't we have to think ahead? Because if we don't think ahead, we're going to get outsmarted by our competitors every time. There's always something that we have to overcome and learn to deal with that we did not expect. And I believe that surviving any kind of situation requires that type of a critical thinking level, in my opinion. And what's really cool is when you possess the analytical ability to think ahead, plan your moves, and have several different options in case something hits you that you didn't expect, it creates something really special. Having that skill really creates a special phenomenon, and that phenomenon is called confidence. Okay? And confidence also leads to a lot less stress. Confidence leads to a lot greater peace of mind. And see, peace of mind, that's what it's all about. It comes from the confidence. Okay? And I got to tell you, folks, my faith in God is the only thing, it's the only virtue more important to me than my level of confidence. Okay? Because I know that through God all things are possible. But confidence is developed primarily through analytical thinking and a lot of practice. Okay. Recently, as I told you, when I was reading that post by Kev over at the Survivalist boards, and the reason it caught my attention is because of my background. And as you know, I want to talk a little bit more about chess. As you know, there's various pieces on a chessboard that each player has. And if you haven't played the game before, listen carefully. And even those of you who have played the game, some of you experienced chess players, I think you're going to appreciate some of what I've got to share with you. Okay? There's very unique pieces that each player has. And the real unique thing about chess is that each player starts with the same pieces. And they start with the same amount of each piece. So really, they start with a level playing field. Funny thing is, I used to think that the black pieces were superior. Because my dad always used to beat me, and my dad always used to choose black. So my little mind at that time when I was 7 or 8 years old, you know how kids think. Oh, well, the black pieces must have something special about them because you know, my dad always wins, and he's always got... That wasn't the way it is, obviously. But everybody starts on a level playing field. Everybody starts with the same amount of pieces. Now, let's talk about pawns, first of all. Pawns are the weakest piece on the board, the weakest in terms of power and what they can do. But pawns are a lot like stockpiled food and water and first aid supplies and firewood and fuel and consumable stuff like that. And as I mentioned, even though the pawns are the weakest in terms of the power, they're critically essential for survival. Okay? The other thing about pawns in the game of chess is pawns have a rescue power. Okay? The reason I say that is because if a chess player can successfully move their pawn to the other end of the board without his opponent taking that pawn, that player then gets to reclaim a lost piece. So if used wisely, pawns have excellent rescue power. And isn't that what food and shelter and water and first aid supplies and firewood and stuff like that, doesn't that have rescue ability? Because it helps keep us alive until rescue can come, if that's the case, if rescue's going to come. Okay, so that's pawns. Now, there's another piece called rooks. All right, rooks, a rook is in the shape of a castle. All right, and let's liken that to our home. Okay, it represents our home. It's our castle. All right, the rook is your shelter. Okay, it's your retreat. It's your bug out location. It's your campsite. Whatever. It has more power than obviously the pawns, and more power than a lot of pieces on the board. And it's kind of like your home. Okay, it can be very vulnerable, but it also has a lot of power. And the funny thing is about the rook is that you lose a lot of power when your opponent takes that piece away from you. The rook can move as many spaces as you want it to move, but only in one given direction. It can only move vertically or horizontally, but it can go as many spaces as you want to move it. Okay, and much like your home, you're going to lose a lot if you lose your rook. So you certainly don't want anybody to take your rook, just like you don't want anybody to take your home. Think about that. I'll get back to that in a little while. Now, the knight. Let's talk about the knight on a chessboard. Okay, the knight is a symbol. It's a symbol of old Europe. All right, it's the defender of faith and the defender of the crown. Okay, and one thing that's unique about the knight, the knight's the only piece on the chessboard that can jump over other pieces on the board. Okay, so I kind of liken the knight to a weapon, sort of. Okay, a good chess player learns to use the knight in self-defense, to defend the home, to defend the castle. And the knight's a good self-defense piece because it has the unique ability to move two spaces in one direction and then one more space 90 degrees either left and right. All right, so it can move two spaces and then one space 90 degrees either left or right at the player's will. Now, no other piece can do that. It's unique. No other piece can move in more than one direction in the same chess move. Okay? All right, and no other piece can jump over another piece either. So the unique thing about the knight is your opponent always has to be aware of where your knight is at all times. And woe be to a chess player that doesn't know where his opponent's knight, his opponent's weapons are at all times. Okay? Sometimes when I'm playing chess, I like to move my knight first, out of the box, right away. It's one of the first things I like to do, is at least bring one of my knights out into play right away. Okay, it throws off my opponents. It gets my opponent thinking that I'm bringing my weapon into play right away, and sometimes they can't figure out why. And all of a sudden, and I can kind of see it sometimes when I play against my son or somebody else who's good at chess. They're kind of scratching their head wondering why I'm bringing my knight out, but I've always had good luck bringing my knights out first. So consider the knight your weapon, and consider the knight as your warrior in the game of life. Okay? Happens to be my favorite piece on the chessboard. Next, I want to talk about the bishop. All right, as Kev said from the survivalist boards, I like what he said here. The bishop is the symbol of what is good and holy. All right, the bishop is sort of a noble piece. It has a lot of power, but again, it can only move in one direction at a time. It can only move diagonally, and it has to stick to its color. So you got one bishop on the white squares, and you got another bishop on the black squares, and it can only move diagonally. It can move as many spaces as the chess player wants to move it, but it's one-dimensional. But it also is a very powerful piece, all right? And you certainly don't want your bishops to be taken away from you either. So its power is kind of in a different way. It's very similar to the rook's power, all right? But the rook can only move straight ahead or left and right. Now, both the rook and the bishop can also move backwards. But again, they've got to stay in their lanes, so to speak. Now, let's talk about the queen, all right? As most of you know who play the game of chess, the queen is the most powerful piece on the chessboard. And really, that's the way it should be, isn't it? I mean, you know the old saying, if mama ain't happy, no one's happy. And isn't that really the way it is in real life, folks? The queen has the power. Okay? The queen can move in any direction as the player wants to move her. And the queen can move as many spaces at a time that she wants, and as many spaces as the player wants to move her. Okay, she can only move in one direction at a time, but she can move diagonally, she can move horizontally, vertically, as many spaces as necessary to get the job done. And just like the queen is the most powerful piece on the chessboard, it's very similar to women can sometimes be a lot more effective than men in a survival situation. Okay, a lot of times women are more resourceful and more cunning than the men are. A lot of times women can keep their cool better than men. Sorry, guys, but I'm just telling the truth here, okay? So a good chess player has lost a lot if they lose their queen. The game's not over, but they're in a world of hurt if they lose that queen. Now, let's talk about the king. Okay? There are some people who don't know the game of chess very well that think that the king is the most powerful piece on the board, but it's not. Okay? The king can only move one space at a time in any direction. And the one major power that the king has, here's the biggest power the king has. The game's not over until the king is captured or checkmated. So as long as the chess player has his king, he's still in the game. Is it life? Quite a bit like that. Is it survival? Quite a bit like that. But the thing to remember is the king cannot survive without a great deal of teamwork from the rest of all the other pieces on the board. Okay? And once the king is all alone, if you've ever been a chess player and all of a sudden you're down to just your king and maybe a couple of pawns, the game ends pretty quickly after that, okay? Because the king has lost all of his weapons and all of his resources. He dies a quick death if his opponent still has a bunch of his weapons and a large team still assembled and still in the game. How similar is that to real life? Think about it, okay? Only through skillful planning and resources will the king win the game, and also win the game called real life. And that's the way it should be. And so a skillful chess player, and I would submit to you a skillful survivalist, they learn to use their resources and their weapons and their players in a manner that maximizes their chance of success. I'll say that again. A skilled chess player and a skilled survivalist knows how to maximize their resources and maximize the teamwork of whatever team they've got assembled to win the game. And isn't that what survival is really all about? So, many thanks to Kev for posting that. And as I mentioned, I'm going to put a link to that post in the show notes, and so you can read the comments and things. But I think that that really speaks to teamwork, and it speaks to dedication and knowledge and planning and strategizing and creating the motivation that it takes to succeed in life and also to survive. And if you can learn the game of chess and you can be successful at it, then you're going to be developing those plan A's, plan B's, plan C's, and you're always going to be thinking 3, 4, maybe 5 moves ahead of your opponent. And folks, when I talk about opponent, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not just talking about opponents as in criminals on the street. This is not a self-defense slanted podcast. I know that the last couple shows I did were self-defense. I'm talking about the general opponents that we run into just in this game called life. I like to talk about thriving today so we can survive tomorrow, that what we do today matters. And what we do today helps set us up in case something goes wrong. It sets us up for success. And that's where I think this analogy between survival and the game of chess is very applicable to what we do as survivalists. And, you know, as I mentioned, we're not a bunch of kooks, folks. We're just people that are living ordinary lives, and all of a sudden maybe something goes wrong, and we need to deal with it. Okay, so learn the game of chess if you haven't already. If you used to play it and you kind of got away from it, maybe you might want to go back to it and sharpen up your skills. You'll be amazed how it'll start to broaden your analytical thinking. All right, I'm going to shift gears now. The rest of this show is going to be about a little bit of a different subject, but I got a couple of announcements that I want to share with you before I dive into the next part of the show. First of all, I want to talk about our website, www.todayssurvival.com. If you are downloading these podcasts off of the website, make sure you're subscribed. There's a big orange subscribe button on there. Put some comments on the website, too. Not everybody looks at our forum. Sometimes people just look at the website. They're just passing through. They read a few comments. Good, bad, or indifferent. I don't care what you think of the show, folks. I just want to hear what you think of it. I'm open-minded. Like I've always said, you know, my mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So any kind of constructive criticism you want to give me, I can handle it. I'm a big boy. I can handle any kind of constructive criticism. Good stuff. Send me that feedback too. Jump on there. If you are listening to this show on iTunes, please do the same there. Give me some feedback on iTunes. Some of you have. Thank you very much for that. And rate the podcast. That would be much helpful. Don't forget about the Sack Club, folks. The Sack Contest is really starting to heat up. Congratulations, Jack Pine Savage. He just sent in quite a few good responses. I think he's in the lead right now. But a lot of people set to win some pretty cool stuff, some pretty cool books, some good CDs that What's Up has put together that have a lot of really good survival information on them. I'm pretty impressed here. So, and to those of you who have donated books, Lord Tennyson and M. Barnattle, thank you very much for doing that. So, folks, step up to the plate. Refer somebody to the show or write one of your pinhead politicians who represent you and let them know how you stand on a subject or on a topic matter. Either one of those will score a point and your name will go into the drawing. If you refer somebody, just make sure that they give me your username and state that they were referred by you. Also, remember to check out our two longtime sponsors. I haven't had a chance to mention them in a while, but don't forget about Knives and Gear. Jeff just revamped his website. And take a look at the second part of my review on my survival knife, my everyday carry knife that I absolutely love, actually. Not my survival knife. My survival knife is a K-bar. But take a look at my everyday carry knife. I got it from Jeff at knivesandgear.com. He just redid his website. Has a lot of cool stuff on there. And don't forget about Personal Senior Monitoring, Terry Allen's company. Don't forget about our seniors, folks. If you have a senior in your life that you want to help keep them out of a nursing home and help enhance the quality of their life, especially if they're living by themselves, it is our obligation, folks, to take care of our parents and grandparents. They took care of us when we were young. Let's take care of them. Check out personalseniormonitoring.com. I'll put a link to those sponsors in the show notes as well. And that wraps up the announcements. I don't like to make this show real commercial. One thing I do want to say, if you can support the show, folks, this is not my full-time job, it's just a hobby, but I like to be able to keep the show going. There are some expenses involved, and every once in a while, I got to spend a little bit of money here and there to keep things rocking and rolling for you. If you can, great. If you can't, I understand. If you're paying off debt, trying to put together some survival preps, hey, that's a whole lot more important than contributing to this show. But if you can, that would be greatly appreciated, and that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't like to get real commercial. So let's dive into the next segment. So in the next segment of this show, I want to play an audio soundbite for you from Gerald Celente. I think most of you probably know who Gerald Celente is, but if you don't, he's the director of Trends Research Institute. He's been uncanny with some of his accurate predictions as to what's going to happen. And you know, folks, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist person. You know that. I make a big point about saying that. I really don't think that Gerald Celente is a conspiracy theorist. I think Gerald Celente sees things the way they are, tells the truth, and tries to ring the bell and sound the warning signs as to what's going on. I think he makes a lot of sense. I think he calls things as he sees them and tries to tell people about it. He's very good at analyzing the trends that are taking place. So he's coined a phrase, or he's coined a philosophy called neo-survivalism. And I think that a lot of people who listen to this show, and probably a lot of people who are waking up and getting interested in this, are neo-survivalists. I'm going to let Gerald Celente talk about what a neo-survivalist is, and Judge Napolitano is going to ask him. He was recently on Freedom Watch, a show by Judge Andrew Napolitano, so you can hear it for yourself. Before I get into that, little news flash. I don't know if you saw this, but it came out in yesterday's news. Texas Governor Rick Perry, back in February, was on a jog. He was jogging near the Capitol in Austin, out in a somewhat of a vacant area, and he was walking his Labrador puppy. And while he was walking his dog, a coyote tried to attack his dog, and Governor Perry pulled the Ruger LCP 380 pistol with a laser sight that he carries, and shot the coyote. True story. Happened in February. The news just broke yesterday. I'm not sure why it just broke yesterday. But way to go, Governor Perry. First of all, two things I like about that report. Number one, Governor Perry carries a pistol. That's great. I think that's awesome. I mean, I really do. He's got the legal right to do it, especially in the great state here of Texas. And folks, that's another reason to carry a weapon. Sometimes carrying a weapon is not just about defending yourself from other people. Sometimes defending yourself from an animal is necessary. I shoot in my IDPA club almost every Saturday with a Dallas police officer. And he's told me about a number of occasions where he's had to draw his gun to shoot a pit bull. He was doing his police work and they were answering a call. It's happened to him more than once. And they were attacked by dogs, specifically pit bulls and Rottweilers, and he's had to put them down with his gun. So, folks, the threat doesn't always come from people. So, way to go, Governor Perry, and good shot. One shot from a 380. Who says a 380 is not effective? I know it's just a coyote, but that just proves what a well-placed shot from a 380 semi-automatic pistol can do. So, I bet your Ruger's going to sell a lot more LCPs now that this news story has broke. All right. Anyway, here you go. Here's Gerald Celente on Freedom Watch. Hope you enjoy this. I'll be back on with some more comments when it's over. Have a listen.
Hello and welcome to Freedom Watch, your daily dose of raw liberty online at foxnews.com. I'm Judge Andrew Napolitano here, defending freedom, defending your natural rights, and defending your right to have a government that stays within the confines of the Constitution. On the last leg of a South American fact-finding mission last month, my next guest, Trends Institute Director Gerald Celente, and his colleague were in Santiago, Chile, when the unbelievable happened. Shortly after 3 o'clock in the morning, a massive 8.8 magnitude earthquake struck off the coast of Chile. The five-star hotel Jerry was in began to shake and rattle with the force that only a quake of that size can create. From the 14th floor, Jerry and his colleague immediately ran down the staircase and astonishingly made it down 14 flights without any injury. Both are black belts, and they credit their survival to decades of physical and psychological training. This training, called neo-survivalism, is one of the top trends that Jerry forecasts and discusses at the Trends Research Institute. It is always my pleasure to welcome back to the show the ultimate survivor and director of the Trends Research Institute, Jerry Salenti. Jerry, welcome back to Freedom Watch.
Hey, thanks, Judge.
So before we talk about the current state of affairs in America from an economic point of view and your prediction for the near-term and long-term future, what happened in Chile? What happened to you?
Well, the interesting things were actually dogs woke us up. Santiago is filled with dogs sleeping all over the sidewalk, stretched out every day, no matter where you walk. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, we were awakened by dogs. Windows were closed 14 stories up. And it was a wake-up call. There was a tremor. Immediately following the tremor, I knew Chile's an earthquake zone. Now, I was partially dressed and out. The important things to understand were we went down 14 flights of stairs, Judge. No one in front of us. Most people panicked. I interviewed people the next day. The building didn't come down, but if you look at yesterday's New York Times, you'll see that in Santiago, the building suffered serious internal and structural damage.
All right. What is neo-survivalism?
What the people did, Judge, is they called the front desk asking for advice. They waited for tour operators. They hid in bathtubs. They went under their desks. People were afraid to think for themselves.
All right.
Neo-survivalism means that in these times of whether it's economic peril, whether it's going to be terrorism, whatever it is, have a plan. What finally got us out of there was our network from attackproof.com. We sent out an SOS that we were stuck there, and worldwide we were getting information. And we finally got information that said, you know, rent a car, get a car, drive to Mendoza, Argentina, fly from there to Buenos Aires, etc. So in these times, people need to think for themselves. They need a network of like-minded people, and they need to plan ahead.
All right. Your neo-survivalism skills and your internet network arguably saved your life in this earthquake in Chile. Now take this neo-survivalism, of which you are an expert proponent, and translate it into economic forecasting for me. It is a foregone conclusion, I think. Even the biggest of big government types must concede that the federal government of the United States of America is broke, and there is no hope unless there's a radical change in its policy for that to change.
Well, you're right on target. We're in debt $40,000 a person. It'll never be paid off. So where's neo-survivalism is at the basic level? You know, pick up an article today, the magazine Martha Stewart Live, or whatever the name of the Martha Stewart's magazine, and in it there's a story about local butchers. Well, one's right around the corner from us, Fleischer's, up here in uptown Kingston, New York. Neo-survivalism, supporting your neighbors, being in tune with the community, helping each other out during these difficult economic times. You know, Judge, I believe in the golden rule. Those who have the gold rule. And right now, China has most of the gold.
So, all right. China has most of the gold, and China is the world's banker. A couple of specific questions for you. Will a time come when China stops being America's banker? Will a time come when China demands interest rates that we don't want to pay? Will a time come when China demands security, like a mortgage on Yellowstone National Park, for example, before it continues to fork over cash?
The time is now. The time is happening. We're in a lull period. And this is what we're talking about when we're talking about neo-survivalism. Make plans now. The crash of 2010 is about to happen. Whether it's the calamity going on in Greece, you know, every day they're coming up with another non-solution, pretending that they have one at hand, or whether it's China unwinding its position out of U.S. treasuries. It's going to happen. It is happening. The nation is going broke.
I want everyone who is listening to us now to recognize and realize to whom we are listening. Jerry Salenti is one of the few people on the planet who predicted with uncanny accuracy and precision exactly what would happen to the United States economy in the fall of 2008. And now we hear prediction of what happening when, Jerry.
It's underway now. The timing is very difficult because these things are so manipulated, whether it's high-frequency trading, black pools, Madoffs or ripoffs. We know that there's a lot of behind-the-scenes manipulation going on. They want to make it appear that things are calm and everything's under control. It's not under control. It's the stimulus money pouring out of China, the stimulus money coming out of India, the stimulus out of Japan, South Korea, U.S., U.K., Australia. The stimulus is drying up. The crash is about to happen.
All right. It's obvious that the government won't wake up. It's obvious that people like you, as accurate as you've been and as compelling as you've been, and those of us here in the media who have a loud megaphone that have been causing voices like yours to be heard all over the place, is not resonating with this big government style of government that we have. What can individuals do to prepare for the crash that you say is now imminent?
Well, one thing is don't go a penny more into debt. Take seriously that thing they used to call Yankee frugality. Wear it up, use it out, make it do without. And support your local community. Buy everything you can to keep the cash locally. It can't keep going overseas and having a high standard of living. They don't work together. The other things, only speaking for myself, not financial advice to anybody, only for me, I keep buying gold. I don't believe in the digital money with the paper it's not printed on. And as we're seeing what's going on in Europe and all of the currencies, to me, it's always good as gold.
Is there anything we can do to wake up the government? Would
you
your
know, I
voice...
see these movements happening. Today we got swarmed with this Swarm USA kind of thing about readjusting the Federal Reserve, doing away with it, and bringing the power back to Congress. It's the Tea Parties. It's people like yourself. You know what it is, Judge? We're old enough to remember in our generation when there was dignity among people. People had self-respect, and that's what people have to start gaining back. Don't follow your leaders. People that follow their leaders wait until it's too late to take action. So, yeah, it's a time to become active. It can be turned around. It is being turned around.
Jerry Salenti, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on Freedom Watch.
Hey, thank you, Judge.
Okay, I want to recap a couple of things that Gerald Salente said because I think that they bear repeating. You know when he was talking about escaping the building after the earthquake hit in Chile, and he said that nobody was in front of him going down the stairs, people couldn't think for themselves, they were calling the front desk and asking for advice? Give me a break! You know, this is the problem that is out there. And I don't want to sound like I'm complaining or anything, but man, this is the truth. People just simply can't think for themselves. You know, and when I travel, you know, folks, you know I travel a lot. In fact, I'm checking into a hotel here in about 3 hours from now. When I go and I travel and I go to a building, a hotel, for example, a multi-story hotel, there's a few things that I do to try to help keep myself a little more safe. First of all, I'm packing. I'm packing my pistol. I always am. Second of all, my pistol's not going to help me much, though, if there's an earthquake. At least not getting out of the building, it won't. I typically request a second floor room in the hotel. The reason I do that, first of all, it's tougher for burglars, small-time crooks, if they want to bust into a hotel room. It's harder for them to do it on the second floor. They have to virtually come inside the building first to do it. But I don't like to go any higher than the second floor. And the reason I don't like to go any higher than the second floor is if I have to get out of that building, I can get out of the building quicker. I won't have to go down 14 flights of stairs like Gerald Celente talked about. I'll probably have to go down maybe one or two flights of stairs being on the second floor. The other thing I do is after I check into my hotel room, I go back out the door and I make sure I know where all the exits are in the hotel. And I actually walk to each exit and I memorize how many steps that it takes to get to the exit and which direction I have to go. For example, the other day, when I was in El Paso, Texas, I was in a hotel and I memorized it was 28 steps to the exit. I happened to be a long ways away from one. And then on the opposite direction, it was 16 steps. So there were two exits, 28 steps in one direction, 16 steps in the other. It's good to memorize that. If for example, a fire starts or for example, it's dark and all of a sudden power is killed and you've got to get out of the building, there's no lights, there's no way to see, it'll really help you if you know how many steps it's going to take you to get to the stair exit. So things like that. But I'm appalled when I hear Gerald Celente talk about, you know, people in Chile. And this is not just picking on people in Chile, folks. Everywhere. I'm sure if an earthquake like that happened in the United States, you'd still have a lot of bozos like that calling the front desk, trying to find out what to do. It's amazing. It's too bad, but it's what we have out there. Now, another interesting point that I thought he talked about is, did you catch the part where he talked about people need to have a network? They need to have a network of like-minded people and plan ahead. Isn't that what we're doing here at today's Survival Show? We're creating a network of like-minded people. That's what the forum's all about. That's what this podcast is all about. There's many other podcasts and forums out there on survival that are very good, too. Network like crazy. Network with people out of your city and out of your country. Also network with people locally. You never know when you may need to leave the state. You never know when you might need to leave the country. You never know when fellow people who are preparedness-minded folk could help you if you have to evacuate or flee for some reason. So I thought that the network of like-minded people comment was an interesting one. And the final point that I want to remind you of that he made in that audio clip was the fact that we shouldn't be following our leaders, that the time to act is now, and that we need to regain dignity, that there was a time when people had dignity and they thought for themselves, and they didn't just blindly, like the term sheep is often used to describe people, that just blindly follow their leaders without questioning things. I thought that was an excellent point. You know, and I can remember when I was a kid, which really wasn't all that long ago, folks, I'm not quite that old yet, but I remember that I was taught that you have to think for yourself, that politicians, even back when I was young, it was starting to come out, and people were starting to talk about the fact that the politicians were corrupt, that they were not to be trusted, and it didn't matter what party they were from, didn't matter if they were independent, Republican, Libertarian, Democrat, whatever you want to call them, socialist, I don't care, whatever name you want to put on them. That, you know, we could be following our leaders down the drain. And this was 30, 35, 40 years ago I was hearing this stuff. And now more than ever, it's true. So I'm going to bring this show to a close here in just a couple of minutes. But I want to leave you with a final thought. And that is, you know, a couple days ago in the USA Today, an article came out talking about the great recovery that's happening, that people are hiring again, factories are starting to bring people on, that the recovery is now in full swing. It was right on the front page of the USA Today. I don't know if you read it or if you caught that. Baloney. All right? It looks like a recovery, and it might be a little bit of a recovery, but it is, as other people have said, it is a false recovery. I mean, think about what's going on right now. Let me use an analogy. What if you owned a small business? What if it was just you and your spouse that ran a business, and all of a sudden, business dried up and you were broke? But you were able to convince your banker to give you a $100,000 loan. Okay? Somehow or another, you got that banker to give you a $100,000 loan. Your business was broke, and you had no incoming receivables before that. Now, all of a sudden, you can tell the world, hey, you have $100,000 in the bank. And you'd be telling the truth. You have $100,000 in the bank because your banker just gave you a loan. And you might be able to go out and work some special deals with some vendors on some supplies, and you might be in some product and so forth, and you might be able to reduce your cost of goods sold. so low that you can run some specials and you can beat out the competitors. And so you're going to get some business coming in the door for a while. But there's the huge 800-pound gorilla out there that you don't tell anybody about. And that's that $100,000 that you went into debt to make all of this happen, to show the bank account that you have, to show the positive balance, and to show the business coming in the door. And eventually, that debt is going to come due. Eventually, you're going to have to start making payments on that $100,000 if you haven't already. Perhaps the rest of the entire note may even come due, depending on what kind of a loan you were supposed to get. And that's really what we find our country in right now. If you throw enough money at something, you're going to get a little bit of a positive result for a while. For a little while, and that's it. And then it's going to come crashing down again. And just like the analogy I just used about a husband and wife that own a business and go out and borrow $100,000 to make their business go again, the fact is they went into debt. And this country is ridiculously, insanely in debt. And we went into that debt just to so we could show this tiny recovery that we've got going on. Maybe a recovery. It's arguable whether it's really happening or not. But at what price? At what price do we have this minor recovery, if it is one? The price is so huge, and that is the crash that Gerald Celente is talking about. I don't know if it's going to come in 2010 or not. That's something that I might take a little exception with. I might argue with that, but, you know, I mean, he knows more about this kind of stuff than I do. You know, maybe he'll prove me wrong. But the fact that remains is the ridiculous financial moves that we have made to make this smidgen of an appearance of a recovery happen is just incredibly devastating. So folks, if you're not preparing, especially financially, I love what he said. One of the first things out of his mouth when Judge Napolitano asked him what to do, he said, don't go a penny more into debt than you have to. That is so, so incredibly huge, folks. So I'll leave you with that. That's my parting thought for this episode, episode number 87. There's more on neo-survivalism that I want to share with you. I have some of my own thoughts on that, and that's going to come up in the next episode, episode number 88. But for now, folks, my name is Bob Main, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it. Become a better chess player. Become a better analytical thinker. Learn how to outthink your opponents. Learn how to outthink situations that may threaten you. And you know what? If you're not already a neo-survivalist, become one. It will strengthen your resolve. It'll help you harness that power of choice. And like Teddy Roosevelt said, do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in again, folks. I'll catch you next time. Take care. Bye.